Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Ben Allen to the broadcast. Ben is the Chief Information Officer and Chief Innovation Officer of Marsh & McLennan Companies, a global professional services firm providing advice and solutions in risk, strategy, and human capital. Prior to his current role, Ben was President and Chief Executive Officer of Kroll Incorporated, an operating unit of Marsh & McLennan Companies, until it was sold to Altegrity Incorporated. Prior to his appointment as CEO of Kroll, Ben was COO of Kroll, and prior to that, president of Kroll On Track, Kroll's legal technologies and data recovery subsidiary. Additionally, Ben headed Kroll's technology services group, and prior to Kroll's acquisition of On Track, he served as president and CEO of On Track Data International Incorporated. Ben has a BA degree in finance from Washington State University. I recently caught up with Ben in his office in New York City, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Ben discussed the makeup of his IT and innovation teams. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as Ben spoke about the structure of the innovation function, as well as how his team facilitates communication and collaboration across the Marsh & McLennan operating companies, as well as some other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open-source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Ben Allen, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Well, thanks, Peter. I'm a big fan of the Forum, so it's nice to have the opportunity to speak on it.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. Ben, I thought we'd start with your title. So you are not only, like a lot of our listeners, a CIO, but you're the other kind of CIO, the Chief Innovation Officer, something I've come to refer to as the CIO squared. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the advantages you've had, maybe the rationale for you and the organization in having one person hold both titles, but also the advantage in doing so.
Sure. So innovation takes many forms. Obviously, there's product and service innovation, which all of us are familiar with when we think about Apple and Google, etc. But there's also business model innovation, there's product and service delivery innovation, etc. And when you analyze any of those various flavors of innovation, the one conclusion you will come to is that technology has had a disproportionate enabling influence on innovation in all of those areas. So they kind of naturally fit together from my perspective.
Mm-hmm. And do you see that, therefore, I mean, it sounds then that this is potentially a trend that will continue. In other words, is there anything specific about Marsh & McLennan that would make it ripe for this versus a whole range of other
industries? I think it's universally true.
And how do you kind of draw the line between those responsibilities? Do you literally demarcate time, days that you're spending on innovation, days you're spending on IT? Is it something that's more intertwined? How does it work from a people perspective, et cetera?
So they're separate groups inside the company. But obviously, when you're trying to solve innovation problems, a lot of that is once you have a problem worth working on, you've identified some insight where there's commercial value available to capitalize on. It's all about solving that problem in some unique way. And that is about bringing the right bodies of knowledge and experience together that would give you the best percentage chance of solving that problem. So it's less about structure and more about your ability to bring the right people together to solve the right problems. And that may include external parties as well.
That's excellent. And I know that part of, both from an innovation perspective as well as from an IT perspective, part of what you've been focusing on is identifying where the various operating companies, the four main operating companies, might do things more commonly, might collaborate in ways they may not have in the past, might, you know, think about managing the infrastructure or IT in ways that they had not in the past. Can you talk a little bit about the way in which you've thought about managing that, since, of course, you're part of the central organization, the corporate organization, but you have arms into each of those operating companies and reason to have dialogue with the heads of each?
Yeah, so the process of doing that for IT is a journey we've been on for some time. It's a newer journey when it comes to innovation. I've been in that role for Marsh & McLennan for about a year and a half, and it continues to be a journey. And it starts with, I think, an objective review of what can be common across the various operating companies, and also what must be different for each of them to succeed. Their domains are different. The most difficult part, at least that I found, is the objectivity component. Really taking a good hard look about what can be common, because we're all human and we all like to have complete control of our own destiny, or at least the feeling we do. But in order to bring scale to all these things, you need to be open and objective about what can be common. I think the single largest step, at least with respect to IT at Marsh & McLennan, happened in 2006 when we formed a central infrastructure group. Prior to that, each operating company had their own infrastructure group along with their own applications teams that now manages all of what I would call the utility elements, the back office elements of IT. So that includes networking, telecom, desktop support, data center management, etc. And when we look back at how difficult that was to achieve, even today, knowing the enormous economic benefits we got from it, it's a real learning experience. We try to build on that as an example when we go to, again, take an objective look about how we might do other things better. The next step in the journey is to continue to identify areas of commonality through that objective lens. And sometimes we can do that ourselves, and sometimes we need outside assistance to do that. And then, you know, that may take the form of absolute centralization, as we did with infrastructure, or it might mean the implementation of standards, common methodologies, et cetera, or simply tighter collaboration by area.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned, I think, logically, outside parties a couple of times here. And, you know, I think that so often organizations engage vendors to fulfill work. But now there's this change, and it sounds like it's a change of foot here potentially, where the engagement of external parties is viewed as an opportunity to leverage their expertise in new creative ways on your behalf. Yeah. Is that how you're thinking about things?
Well, I think we've contracted with outside parties for a whole host of reasons, including, as you say, to fulfill, you know, work. But the benefit they bring in terms of advising, in many cases, is they have no dog in the fight. So they have an objective view that we're trying to get. And secondly, you know, whatever the outcome is whatever the outcome is. They have no interest in how it comes out. And so that can be helpful for someone like me who's trying to figure out what an objective view of this actually is.
Can you talk a little bit about what are some examples of innovations that your team has driven? Would love to understand even a little bit more about the process that got you to some of those.
Yeah, it's a little background here. Operationally, Marsh & McLennan, the enterprise, is organized into four distinct operating companies and our corporate center. So that's Marsh, Mercer, Oliver Wyman, and Guy Carpenter. And the operating companies, for the most part, are largely run separate and distinct from each other. So our goal is not so much to do innovation for them, since they know their markets well, but rather to assist and enable them at improving their capability and capacity to innovate. That's the corporate innovation role. We provide resources, whether that's best practices or access to experts outside the organization as we build relationships, collaboration tools, and we become the glue or the point of connection across the operating companies, since we speak to all of them regularly and they may not connect with each other directly as often as we might. So at this stage, I'd say we're more of an enabler than a doer of innovation inside Marsh & McLennan. In terms of concrete accomplishments, I'll name three. I think there's been quite a few. But one of the things that we've brought that's been a big help is a disciplined research capability to help identify unmet needs in the markets that we serve. So where is there a potential for our operating companies and their lines of business to create value? We've got a terrific process for identifying unmet needs so they can begin to work on solving those challenges. We also implemented, in fact, just completed it, piloted it, all went well, thank goodness, an enterprise-wide collaboration platform that allows the operating companies, once they've identified an area they want to innovate around, but aren't exactly sure yet how to solve the problem, to reach out to the entire organization or any part of it that they wish to get help. So that's been a big win for us. And then we're just kicking off what we're calling an action learning program to give people inside the operating companies, those who have a role that centers around innovation, whether it's product management or service delivery, a better understanding of how to think about innovation and that sort of thing.
That's very interesting. Great examples. I wanted to ask a follow-up question. There's a debate I know in a lot of organizations who are thinking about an innovation function for the first time, whether it's going to report up to somebody who actually holds the title of Chief Innovation Officer or not. And that is this a function that is best served by a team that is dedicated to innovation, or should it be the part-time job of a variety of people?
Yeah.
And I wonder, since you're somebody obviously who's thought about this, has in fact put together a team and processes and methods, and now in fact, as you've just demonstrated, have success stories to speak of, do you fall on one side or another? Do you see that both could work? Are there caveats to the answer?
I think it's entirely dependent on the type of business you're in and the dynamics of the industry you're in and the velocity of change in the industry you're in. So if I were to contrast, for example, consumer electronics, where your revenue trajectory is directly related to annual product releases in many cases, they're really set up to innovate. I mean, it's just part of the fabric of the organization. If you use Apple as an example, which everyone does, without the iPhone 5 and the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 7, they'll start to see a decline in their business. So they have to constantly innovate to be successful. If you contrast that with our insurance broking business, you're not going to see the same velocity of change. It's a renewal business. It's more of a subscription type business. So while we have to continually provide great service and compete for the business, it's not so much a discretionary spend like you might see in consumer electronics. Mm. So yeah, it's very different depending on the type of industry you're in and the velocity of change.
And how about the metrics to evaluate the effectiveness of innovation? Are there certain things that you kind of hold dear to determine whether or not something is truly an innovation? Whether it's truly new revenue, truly new sources of cost reduction, other sorts of things like that?
Again, I think it would depend a lot on the industry. So, you know, one of the very innovative industrial companies is 3M, which I spent a little bit of time with 3M, and they have an amazing statistic to me, which is that something like 20% of their revenue in any given year comes from new products and services. So they're an innovation engine for sure. In our world, we compete a lot on talent and service. We're a professional services firm, so our metrics are going to be quite different. Are we retaining clients as opposed to selling them new products, you know, necessarily? Mm-hmm. So, I do think you have to have metrics to know if you're meeting your goals, but they're going to be different by industry.
Makes sense. Makes absolute sense. Well, probably people are noticing in your responses, Ben, that you have the perspective of somebody who's not necessarily a lifelong IT person. All the business terminology that you're using and the passion you clearly have for the development of new business ideas, solutions, products, etc. So it may not be such a surprise to our listeners that, in fact, you used to run for Marsh & McLennan, one of the operating companies. And so you have a very unusual path towards the CIO role. In fact, if I understand things correctly, your first true role in IT was as CIO, Chief Information Officer.
That's correct.
And so I'm wondering, you know, what do you see as you reflect on your experience thus far, about a year or so in this job? What are the advantages or maybe the disadvantages in the path that you've taken to this role?
I would say it's both an advantage and a disadvantage, mm-hmm. depending on how you look at it. My instincts, obviously, are business first. I've been a CIO for 1 year and a business person for a long time. I won't date myself, Peter. But I think that's a good thing because technology is largely an enabler in business anyway of the broader business enterprise. And technology second. And I would say I'm a bit of a geek at heart. I mean, I'm a true lover of technology, both in my job and personally. But I get most excited by the commercial opportunities that technology brings to the table. I think it's an advantage in that I fully understand the challenges of running an operating company and being on the line for results every 90 days. I sympathize with the challenges that the CEOs have, having been one myself, and I view my role as helping make their job easier. Not having grown up in IT, particularly in the infrastructure side of IT, I lean quite heavily on the expertise of our worldwide infrastructure team. So I'm not sure that's really a disadvantage, but it probably does require a bit more patience on their part than it would be if I had, you know, years of experience in that area.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, since I answered to one of the earlier questions, part of what you're doing is trying to find out where there are sources of commonality, where things could be done commonly across multiple parts of the organization. To return to a point you've just made, that empathy of having been a leader of one of those operating companies, of trying to parse out what's best for operating company versus what's best for Marsh & McLennan as a whole, that degree of empathy that you can share with those fellow leaders must be a real advantage.
It is. And at the end of the day, and I think our CEOs would echo this, in fact, I know they would, we're a single enterprise with a single stock price, and we're all rewarded on the overall performance of the organization, as are our shareholders and our clients. So, yeah, they're interested in doing this, you know, taking advantage of scale across the enterprise, but not at the expense of being able to deliver great service for their clients. And as I said earlier, that's going through a process to identify objectively where you can do that and where you can't is a continuing challenge, and it'll stay one.
Makes sense. Before you go, Ben, I'd like to ask you a bit about IT trends. You mentioned you're a geek at heart and somebody who thinks a lot about IT, obviously in your day job, but also when you're at home. Can you tell us a bit about some of the trends that particularly excite you as you look into the future?
So I'll answer that in my capacity professionally as opposed to personally. You know, and where do you start, right? There's so many big trends going on today. But I would say the unprecedented level of connectivity in the world today and the ever-increasing ubiquity of lower-cost devices hold great promise for massive increases in flexibility, productivity, efficiency, and of course, innovation, and that excites me a great deal.
Mm. And how do you see that applying to a business like this one? How do you see things differently as a result of some of those trends being realized?
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about our colleagues and our employees. Mobility's already brought a lot, and it can continue to bring more. I think that it gives them the flexibility to work wherever they are, whenever they want to or need to. and never be disconnected unless they choose to be disconnected. So I think that alone has made life easier for employees.
That makes sense. Makes very good sense. Well, Ben Allen, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing your perspectives and your wealth of different experiences, as well as the two roles that you lead. It's been a really great conversation.
My pleasure. Thanks, Peter.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat's business is built on the power of community-driven innovation, and it's this approach that enables customers to meet the demands of today's enterprise and prepare for tomorrow's opportunities. Connect to an ecosystem of innovation and visit redhat.com today to learn more. Just listen to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategies' five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our editors are Chris Davis and Calhan Cool, and our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.